Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM, live from the Sutherland Studios. It is Monday, so even though we have college football and it's Black Monday in the NFL and the playoff picture set, we still have NBA basketball to talk about. And I think for a lot of people, we're approaching that time frame where even the lighthearted fans really get into it. For me, it's always been MLK, right? If you're not into the NBA, you pay attention on MLK Day, and then from that point on, the NBA is going to be kind of king because football starts dwindling down. Joining us right now, a man that loves, eats, drinks, and sleeps basketball, joins us every Monday. We have James Holis over the phone. James, great to get you back on here in 2024. I appreciate the time again.
Since the calendar has turned over, the Celtics have been great. The Lakers have been not so great. The Bucks have been a dumpster fire, and life is good.
Yeah, the Lakers have been bad. They've been very, very bad. You and I were talking off of the cuff. That's a great place to start, because we had this extensive conversation on the show late last week. I kind of went off on LeBron James a little bit. You and I were talking about LeBron before we hopped back up on the air, and the idea that this is the first time in his career that LeBron has been a minus in that plus-minus ratio. That right there is telling. There's been talk about Darvin Ham being on his way out. I didn't think he'd make it to MLK Day. I really didn't. I thought it was that bad there for a while, where I almost believe he has lost the locker room. But it goes beyond Darvin Ham. There are legitimate problems with on this roster. I think this is a team that gets in as a 7, 8, 9, maybe the 10 seed. They get into the play-in round. But James, you called it false hope getting a win last night against the Clippers, and that's kind of what this smells like.
Yeah, man. It's going to be like a death by a thousand cuts for Lakers fans this year, I fear. Let's be real. It all started 2 years ago when they had a bad playoff run because of injuries, and they decided to go all in on Russell Westbrook. That was the first domino, and everything else has been trying to fix that problem and trying to play catch up to where they were. Because that team was really probably a contender, and they let injuries and they had the rabid chase for a star. Me and you were just talking about it. Like, LeBron is still great in so many ways, but a lot of things that you say now, you couch it by saying for a 39-year-old. So I think most people will agree with this in totality. He's no longer a top maybe three or four, maybe five guy, right? Because some nights he just doesn't have it, and some nights, most nights the defense isn't there, and we know he's gonna get dinged up, and he's probably gonna miss some more games. And like we said, the other night he just didn't have it. It's kind of rough to watch as a basketball fan. I love him historically, and I respect what he's done. But as a Celtics fan, I love to see every bit of it.
Well, I think we can tie the Lakers maybe somewhat into Phoenix here, and I know we have had a lot of conversation with Phoenix. James, I just feel like we're getting out of the era of teams having to unequivocally chase a star and give up everything and mortgaging the future to get that star. Once upon a time, the big three, right, that was the popular craze. It's copycat league, let's be real. The NBA, the NFL, they're copycat leagues. I think that's where baseball sets itself aside. I don't feel like teams that chase that big three or that big two, and that's not the formula anymore in the NBA. Would you agree with that?
I'm going to agree with the caveat that it's definitely better to have a big three, meaning like, maybe a super duper star, then another like really high level all star / borderline superstar, and then the third all star type guy, but they have to be complementary. That was the thing with the original big three, if you want to say Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen. They all very much were complementary. You had a big man who could shoot jumpers and play defense. You had a kind of all around versatile swing man scoring wing, and then you had a guy who mostly wanted to shoot. So they operated in very different areas of the floor, and they could play off of each other. And that's where I think Phoenix made a mistake. I don't think Bradley Beal was the right complimentary piece. He's not a good enough level of player, and he doesn't bring anything except a lot of duplicity to what they already had. He duplicates a lot of what Devin Booker is, except worse. He scores a lot like Kevin Booker, except less efficiently. So he was just the wrong piece. And again, the injury stuff, obviously. But yes, I will agree with you that we see like Jamal Murray and Jokic. Now, Joker is obviously, arguably the best player in the league. And then Aaron Gordon can operate as a kind of borderline all-star, as a Swiss Army knife high-level player. But, yes, that's two high-level players. So, yeah, man, if you can get two tent-pole guys, you don't really need a third star. And I think teams are realizing, let's not go all in. First, the Lakers, and now Phoenix might be a cautionary tale about that.
And maybe the Clippers. I know they've played better basketball as of late, but I feel like when Ballmer took over this organization, there was such a need for relevancy within the Los Angeles market. They went all in on Paul George. They went all in on Kawhi Leonard. I still don't believe this team is going to be a serious threat just because I don't think they can stay healthy. That's still going to be the thing that I lean on. Until they prove that they can stay healthy, they can't, right? But when you look at it, it seems to be working out in this realm a little bit better than I anticipated with the Clippers in adding James Harden, re-upping on Russell Westbrook. It seems to be working well. It's exceeded my expectations. I'll put it that way.
I think we all didn't think we'd see this level of James Harden again. And while he isn't peak Harden, I don't think he's even like the best Harden we saw in Philly. He definitely has. You can good on him for subjugating his ego a bit and realizing he had to really take a step back. Kawhi Leonard again playing like if you could say he's a top three player this season. Watch him play and look at the numbers. So that makes it a lot easier. And, hey, let's draw another parallel. You know where the Clippers already almost screwed up? Getting Russell Westbrook thinking he'd be that third guy.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, they weren't terrible with him, but he's still Russell Westbrook. Bad fit with a guy like Kawhi and Paul George. So good on them for making that work and figuring it out really quickly and taking the time to get in James Harden. They do look dangerous, but again, Kawhi, it's injuries, right? He missed a couple games already. He's been playing great. He's been playing a lot this season. They're just holding their breath every time he goes down. Him and Paul George have to be healthy. But you got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, and then this level of James Harden and a guy like Zubac who just knows his role, Norman Powell, designated scorer off the bench. They all know their roles, and they play well together.
I'm going to preference this by saying you are one of the most realistic slash pessimistic Celtic fans that I know. 28-7 right now. They've won 8 out of their last 10 games. You talked about the Bucks not playing great basketball as of late. I think there's obvious problems in Philly. I do believe the Eastern Conference is great front to back. I really like it. It's entertaining basketball. That's what I mean when I say it's great. It's entertaining basketball. But James, I have seen no one even remotely close to the Boston Celtics, at least as we sit right now, pre-trade deadline, there is no one that I can believe would beat this team in a 7-game set in the Eastern Conference. I just don't see it.
I'm cautiously optimistic, but I've said this since the summertime, right? They've exceeded my expectations. I didn't think that the arrival of Porzingis would make this much of an impact. I knew he was still good, but I thought he was a big numbers on a bad team type of guy after what we saw in Dallas. He has legitimately changed the way he's played. He's, according to his own mouth, he's embraced the analytics, so he's shooting threes or he's getting into the post and scoring. Defensively, he's been an absolute game changer. He's been everything that the Celtics thought Rob Williams was going to be. Maybe not the same level of, like, ooh, eye-popping blocks, but defensively, he's been amazing. So my issue with the Celtics, though, as I'm going to say it, we saw against Golden State, they were up 7 with, like, 4 minutes left, and they ended up losing that game. It's the mental side. Boston is to me, Boston is almost like wow, people think of Vince Carter. All the tools to be the best player of all time. But between the ears, when things got tight, Vince Carter didn't always show up. And that's kind of, and it sucks. It hurts my heart to say this about the Celtics, but we saw in the playoffs last year. We saw in the playoffs the year before against Golden State, which is a little more understandable. But, like, I wanted to see them come and make a statement against the Warriors, and they almost did. But, hey, Jaylen Brown melted down. Jrue Holiday wasn't. Where he played subpar, and we lost a very winnable game to a floundering Golden State team. So my issue with Boston, all the tools are there. Do they have the computing power? Do they have the guts to actually take it all the way home? And I want to see them have a couple good signature wins against tough teams before I can really believe in them.
Yeah, they're 28-7. I mean, how I will say this. When we look at all the teams in the NBA, this includes the world champion Denver Nuggets. James, I don't see another team as carefully and well-constructed front-to-back as the Boston Celtics right now in the NBA. And I think that teams are playing catch-up, and I think over the next month with the trade deadline looming, that's the team that people are trying to stack up against. Because again, roster construction-wise, I think it's damn near perfect when you stack it up against the other teams in the league.
100%, I agree. I think all the tools are there. They can play big if they need to with Al Horford and Porzingis. And then I think Cornette has been actually a pleasant surprise off the bench is how he holds up. They can go super small, put Tatum at the 4. And even a guy like Brissett came in the other day playing center. And they had Tatum playing center the other day, and they beat a team. So The versatility, Tatum has started off slow as far as shooting the three, but like the last, I want to say, four or five games, he's really like exploded. He's found his range, and the step back is killer. Jaylen Brown has rounded into form at the slow start. Like, everything is there. Again, it sounds like we're beating a dead horse. Injuries, right? KP missed a couple games with a calf issue, and now the eye thing. He left the game after 6 minutes the other night, and they still throttled the Pacers pretty easily. Yeah, I want to say they said since they lost in the IST, I think they've been beating teams by 14 points a game, and they've lost two games. Like, they're 14-2 since then. So I have no real complaints, but again, they're a team that all of this doesn't matter because they're going to be judged by how they do in the playoffs. After losing the finals and then last year taking a quote-unquote step back by losing to the Miami Heat, if they don't get to the finals and at least make a team beat them versus melting down, then none of this matters.
James Hollis, again, our guest right now as we talk NBA basketball. James, I do want to talk about the Utah Jazz. And once again, I mean, as you have pinpointed several times here on the show, it's almost house money for Utah. Hey, look, they're a game right now out of the play-in round, and that would be a huge step forward, I think, for this team. They've played really good basketball over the last month or so, but they are going to be a team that is going to be mentioned with trade rumors. And the one guy that continues to be brought up, and I know people in Utah don't want to hear this name, it's Lauri Markkanen. Tell me, in your opinion, the risks and the reward of moving on from a guy like Markkanen or keeping him within this market.
So, and yeah, all Jazz fans and basketball fans in general, you got to take a big picture, 10,000-foot view of the Jazz. Last year, they tried to strip it down to the studs. They traded for a project in Markkanen. Markkanen has probably exceeded most people's expectations. Like, last year was a lot of fun, but now that the honeymoon's over, injuries and they're losing games. He's a really good player. He is not I don't think he's a 1A type guy where you build your franchise around him, and that's okay. He's a great trade chip now, and like Danny Ainge, he didn't tear it down to the studs last year. He tore it down, but the frame was still there. Maybe now it's time to tear it down to the foundation and get more picks, and maybe get a couple more young prospects that you can throw out there and help you lose, because you'll get more picks in the draft. It is all house money still, right? It's never fun losing, so I get it. Jazz fans, it's agonizing to see a team that last year, at this time last year, they were thinking, oh, we might be a surprise playoff team, and, then reality struck. It's still reality happening right now. Rebuilds aren't fun. I think the Celtics were, back to the Boston again, they were one of the rare teams that could actually win a few games while kind of replenishing the cupboards and getting a guy like Tatum and Brown because of that big trade of Garnett and Paul Pierce over a decade ago, however long it was. So, I still think Jazz fans, I still give Danny Ainge an A+ for what he's doing there. They have assets, and once he decides to clear the decks all the way, then it's gonna hurt a little bit, but like surgery, it's gonna hurt a little bit, but then you'll heal and you'll come back better than ever.
James, tell me if this thought in my mind and this worry of Lauri Markkanen is actually warranted. Okay, because when I look at Markkanen, and I got the numbers here, since he moved over to Utah, since the Jazz acquired him, he's averaging 25 points, nearly 9 boards, and he's shooting like 40% from the 3-point line. He's been great. He's been fantastic. However, I just look at the upcoming salary. Okay, so this year, Markkanen at 17.2, next year it's $18 million. That's a contract season for Markkanen next year. That worries me a little bit, because one of the things that small markets can tend to do is overpay for guys who might not be 1A or even 1B. I think that Markkanen is very adaptable. I think whatever team Danny Ainge decides to assemble, whatever the identity wants to be, I think Markkanen can plug and play. The problem is, in order to keep him, what is it going to cost? Because there is a thing in the NBA called the salary cap. We don't really work within that realm in Major League Baseball, but we do in the NBA. That's my worry with Lauri Markkanen.
So I guess, but even if you get him on a max, it won't be a super max, right? Because he never made the prerequisite all NBA stuff. That's great. That is still, how old is he?
26.
He's not even in his prime yet. Him on a max deal where a team can get him for 4 or 5 years. We've seen it. Russell Westbrook's been moved on a max. Chris, as his prime faded away with years left on it. Same thing with Chris Paul. Years left on the max, he was moved. Every contract is tradable. A young guy who can give you 25 points a game, who is not horrible defensively and has that kind of size and can shoot, is it an overpay? Yes, but it's a Jaylen Brown overpay. Sure, it sounds obscene, but it's movable and it's an asset. And I think I love Jaylen. Jaylen, I think him and Jaylen are the same age. I think Markkanen is a better asset on a max, on a less than super max deal than Jalen is because of the size and because of the shooting. So, it is what it is, man. It's all house money. Even that's like that would be a positive because now he's a positive trade chip.
Mm-hmm.
Then you move him and you get those picks. You get a lot for him. So I think it's a win-win situation with marketing.
Lynn, with this, Zach LaVine, probably the biggest name out there on the trade market. Maybe Siakam, depends on what you're looking for. The Bulls have to move on from LaVine, right? They don't have a choice. I mean, this deal's got to get done within the next month.
It's to the point where it's almost like a salary dump, right? Because they played exponentially better once they traded him, which is a severe indictment of the kind of player that he is. And this is, it sounds really mean to say it, but like that's like if you had Jamal Crawford on the max deal. If you had... he's a super duper scorer. He doesn't defend. He doesn't make guys around him better. He can be like an incendiary, explosive scorer, but he's not like particularly super efficient. He's not a super smart basketball player that's going to leverage his scoring ability. It's tough, and he's making big money. So the fact that he sat down and the team immediately rips off like 8 out of 10 wins or some nonsense, and they've been competitive. Much more competitive than when they had him. They were getting blown out of the water with him, and now they're in every ball game. He's last of a dying breed. We probably won't see another guy that get a max. And it's tough because even a team like the Lakers don't want to touch him. The Lakers need help. Their offense has been horrible, and no one wants to touch him. So I don't know, man. I feel bad for him because he seems like a good guy. He's worked himself into a great NBA kind of scorer. But if he can't play within the framework of a team offense, it's hard.
He's James Hollis again, taking out the time to join us every Monday to talk NBA basketball. James, I know the next like 3 or 4 conversations we have, it's probably going to be dominated in some sense by the trade deadline. There's so much to get into in this regard. And every year it seems like we build the trade deadline up to be this big thing. And then maybe it disappoints a little bit. I don't know how active the trade market is going to be this year. I think maybe we have 3 or 4 names, though. It could shape a lot of things. Like I said, I think a lot of teams have got to be gunning for the Boston Celtics. That's the ideal roster construction. So I'm sure we're going to have plenty more conversations about the deadline in the coming weeks. It is always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, of course, throw out that Twitter handle and where we can find more of you.
At Snotty Drippin, and that's the only place I really am. But me and my buddy JP have a podcast, Dunk Tales. I told you it was shelved and probably indefinitely. Dunk Tales is coming back. We're going to record tonight. So
good.
Look out for us on all streaming platforms. The Dunk Tales, tale like story. You'll see us.
Looking forward to hearing it. James, as always, my man, thank you again for the time. Can't wait to do it again next week.
You're the man, brother.
We're going to pause one more time. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll talk college football when we return. It's Drive Time Sports, and we are live from the Sutherland Studios.